I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Naiman, a policy director at Just Foreign Policy. He edits the Just Foreign Policy Daily News Summary and writes on U.S. foreign policy at the Huffington Post. Previously, he was a policy analyst and researcher at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Naiman.
Good to be with you.
And back in June, you delivered a letter that was signed by Michael Moore, Oliver Stone, Noam Chomsky, and many, many others, Bill Maher, Daniel Ellsberg, etc., along with a petition. You delivered it to the Ecuadorian embassy in London, urging President Rafael Correa of the president of Ecuador to approve Julian Assange's request for asylum. Obviously, that has happened, but there's also a standoff there. What is your next step? In other words, I mean, I read the piece by both Oliver Stone and Michael Moore in the New York Times, and it was a very well written, I thought, and very well reasoned article. What's the next step for those who are trying to, I suppose, what, free Julian Assange? What? How would you describe your political project?
Well, right now there is a dynamic between the government of Ecuador, the government of Britain, and the government of Sweden. The government of Ecuador is trying to get the government of Britain and Sweden, especially Britain, to negotiate seriously, to negotiate in good faith. Julian Assange is willing to go to Sweden, as he has stated repeatedly. But he wants some assurance that when the Swedish legal process is complete, Sweden will not extradite him to the United States to face a U.S. prosecution related to WikiLeaks. And the government of Ecuador has been pressing this case. It offered, for example, for Sweden to question Julian Assange in their embassy in London. Sweden refused. Ecuador asked Sweden to give assurances that they wouldn't extradite Assange to the United States. Sweden refused. Ecuador asked the British government if they would give assurances to oppose U.S. extradition requests from Sweden. They refused. So that is what led to the present standoff, from the Ecuadorian point of view at least. It's the refusal of the British and Swedish governments to meet them halfway, to make some assurance that they would not send Julian Assange to the United States. Our role in this, I think, is to publicize, or our main role, is to publicize the main issues that have previously been submerged. The official story of the British, Swedish, and U.S. governments, and Australian governments, has been that there's no relationship between this British-Swedish legal pursuit of Julian Assange and the threat of U.S. prosecution of WikiLeaks. And there's no reason to be concerned that about the possibility that Sweden might send Julian Assange to the United States. This is just, you know, some paranoid fantasy. That's the, you know, the implication of the official story. But these questions of why, you know, if it's true that there's no relationship, that there's no threat, then you ask, well, then why wouldn't Sweden agree to question Assange in London? Why won't Sweden agree not to send Assange to the United States? Why won't Britain agree not to permit Julian Assange to be sent to the United States? These are questions that Michael Moore and Oliver Stone asked in their New York Times op-ed. These are questions that we've been raising in all our writing. And just today or yesterday, we launched a petition to the New York Times asking the New York Times, please investigate and try to establish answers to these questions which government officials, including U.S. officials, have refused to address.
Now, just a quick question. Robert, are you on a speakerphone?
I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, you're on a cell phone. I guess there's a bit of an echo, that's all.
Is that better?
Sure. Okay. So let me again mention that I'm speaking with Robert Nayman, the policy director at Just Foreign Policy, where he edits the Just Foreign Policy Daily News Summary, and he also was a researcher at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and at Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and he delivered a petition back in June to the Ecuadorian embassy in London. I guess that was at the time when, just after Julian Assange had skipped bail and effectively defected, I guess, to that embassy, calling upon the president of Ecuador to grant Julian Assange political asylum, which he has done. It's led to this standoff, which will probably continue for some time. But then there's an old song, I fought the law and the law won. And I'm wondering, to what extent is we don't know, and the questions you asked haven't been answered, or indeed they haven't even been asked, about guarantees from the Swedes that they wouldn't extradite him, guarantees from the U.S. authorities that they're not out to get him, etc. But just in terms of the Swedish authorities and the British authorities, how much do you think this is simply a case of the legal authorities being just, he poked them in the eye and they're saying, screw you, the last thing you do is pick a fight with a cop. At least that's my thinking. So in the case of the Swedes, he basically gave his back of his hand to the Swedish authorities, and the same with the Brits. He'd skip bail and hit out in this embassy. So do you think that that's an element, or you think that there is a real vendetta here to get him?
Well, I think it's pretty hard to pull apart the two things. We don't have any way of, seeing into the minds of the authorities and allocating, causation between two things that point in the same direction. So on the one hand, these are governments that are very close to the United States. They have close security cooperation with the United States. Britain, major U.S. ally in the illegal war in Iraq, for example, among many other things that you could cite. Sweden also close security cooperation with the United States. So on the one hand, the historical pattern for these countries is close cooperation with the United States. And we know that the United States, according to U.S. press reporting, has an active ongoing, and statements of U.S. officials, an active ongoing investigation on WikiLeaks. So we know that the U.S. is interested in Assange. We know that the U.S. is prosecuting Bradley Manning in the same case. We know that other court documents indicate U.S. investigation of other members of WikiLeaks. On the other hand, we know that, obviously these governments and these authorities enjoy their power. And in the case where they don't feel they have to make any accommodation, then, there's a tendency to say that they won't. So, for example, if you look at the press reports from Sweden, where some people have attempted to address the why question. People in the Swedish legal profession explaining the Swedish government's actions say, well, it's become a matter of prestige. That's not as serious. Our pride is at stake. We have to get this guy. Well, if it were somebody important to them, if it were a government official of a friend of the country, if we're a rich or famous person, they would have a different attitude. You look at how Bill Clinton was questioned in the Paula Jones case, or Karl Rove was questioned in the Valerie Plame case. You know, in these cases, prosecutors are very polite, very deferential. But, you know, Julian Assange is a member of the hoi polloi. So, and, you know, in addition to being, you know, kind of public enemy number one in the Western media. So you see the two things overlap. And it's hard to say, is it because, you know, they're bullies, or, you know, I mean, is it their natural tendency to be bullies, which is allowed to be made manifest because the victim of the bullying is somebody who's a public enemy, you know, according to the West, or is it that, you know, they're going after him because he's public? I mean, how do you distinguish those two things when they overlap so greatly? I think it's clear that, and Glenn Greenwald pointed out in his column in The Guardian today, that the U.S. campaign and the hysterical reaction of the Western governments to WikiLeaks far predates the Swedish government case. It far predates the WikiLeaks publishing the U.S. diplomatic cable. Netanyahu already declared WikiLeaks to be a threat long before that. And there's a long-run trend, a very unfortunate trend, of a crackdown on government whistleblowers in the United States, of which this is a part.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, but I thank you so much for joining us here today, Robert Naiman.
It's good to be with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Naiman, a policy director at Just Foreign Policy, where he edits the Just Foreign Policy Daily News Summary, and previously he was a policy analyst and researcher at the Center for Economic and Policy Research and Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Michelle Manos and Brooke Peterson. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.